is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have detected a new variant. It is a reason for concern in South Africa.
That's economic expert Becky Mahalobo on the possible impact on South Africa if a new COVID-19 strain forces a return to tough lockdown measures. Details coming up. Also, pro-democracy activists in Sudan are accusing Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok of allowing himself to serve as a fig leaf for the military to hold on to power. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The so-called super variant of COVID-19 found by scientists in South Africa has medical communities around the world in a spin as they try to find out more about it and its implications for the pandemic. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg that experts from the World Health Organization are meeting with South African scientists and government officials today. They say the new B11529 variant could be far more transmissible than all previous forms of coronavirus, but they do not know yet if it makes people sicker.
A South African medical scientist has told VOA the new variant's the most serious so far. It has about 50 mutations, making it radically different from the coronavirus first detected in Wuhan, China, in 2019. That, says the scientist, could mean the variant's more infectious and has the potential to evade immunity, making the vaccines currently available less effective.
We have detected a new variant. It is a reason for concern in South Africa.
The leader of the team that sequenced the variant, Professor Tulio D'Oliveira, broke the news at a news conference last night.
What we have done is to act very quick as a truly collaborative network of scientists in South Africa, together with the government, as the case that just starts to increase, to really know what really we are facing. So you have to know the enemy in order to fight.
D'Oliveira's team has confirmed 59 cases of the variant so far in South Africa, Botswana, and Hong Kong. He says B11529 appears to be driving a rise in infections in South Africa's most populous province, Gauteng, which includes Johannesburg.
What we can see is very early signs from diagnostic laboratory that this lineage has rapidly increased in Gauteng and may already be present in most provinces. We can make some predictions about the impact of the mutations, but the full significance remains uncertain, and the vaccines remain the critical tool to protect us against severe disease.
But the health department says only 35% of South Africans are fully vaccinated. If the new variant's as serious as it initially looks, say scientists, that low rate could mean the country's going to get hit by a particularly deadly fourth wave of the pandemic. Health Minister Dr. Joe Pachla says nothing can stop the latest variant from spreading across the country.
It's a matter of days and weeks before we see that. So it does present a major challenge in terms of a further activities, social, there will be meetings of government, of the Coronavirus Council and Cabinet over the weekend to look at the implications of this.
The public's concerned the new variant's going to lead to much stricter lockdown rules, with just weeks to go before the summer holidays. Gauteng Health Department head Macy Lerutla says there may be no other alternative. Last week, there were an average of 100 new COVID-19 cases a day in the province. Yesterday, there were almost 2,000.
People are not adhering to non-pharmaceutical interventions. This COVID pandemic is 90% within our control by ensuring that we adhere to safety measures, having our masks on,
those measures work, says Lerutla, against all COVID variants. Several countries, including the United Kingdom, suspended flights from Southern Africa after the news emerged of a new COVID lineage found there. But as Dr. Michelle Groom of South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases explains, just because the new variant's been found in the country doesn't mean that's its origin.
We're really ahead of the game in terms of the sequencing. We're prepared to detect these new variants, I think, much more than many of the countries. As we know with the other variants, it's very hard to keep them in one place. Delta kind of spread very quickly, you know, across the globe, despite many travel restrictions in place.
Pahla says his scientists find new variants because they look for them, with the aid of one of the world's best virus and disease sequencing labs. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The announcement of a new COVID-19 variant on Tuesday has sparked fears of a return to the hard lockdowns that have battered South Africa's economy and psyche. Experts warn that any more restrictions on business operations and economic sectors like tourism will have dire consequences. The health ministry is urging citizens to strictly adhere to the non-pharmaceutical preventative measures. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The B.1.1.529 variant, which has been described by scientists as very contagious and capable of multiple mutations, comes as COVID-19 daily infection figures in South Africa have risen sharply in the last 10 days. The country's economy already is struggling to reboot, with a record 11 million people jobless, and economic expert Peggy Mashobo told VOA that a hard lockdown could leave it on its knees.
South African economy cannot afford another lockdown. And if you recall in July, one of the major issues that led to the July riots was the increase in poverty levels, largely coming off lockdowns of last year.
Tourism was hit particularly hard. Beaches, restaurants, game parks and hotels have been hoping to make it big during the festive season. Regulations restricting visits to these places could force many businesses to shut their doors for good. The new variant could also have devastating effects in a country where COVID fatigue and vaccine hesitancy are big challenges. Zamampondo Mkalipi, a young student in Johannesburg, told VOA that any restrictions taking away freedoms that only recently were restored is not welcome.
Now that life is sort of normal, the exciting things that I'm doing is hanging with my family, traveling, having brides and everything.
With more than 50% of the population still not vaccinated, Health Minister Joe Pahla made this call during a media briefing announcing the new variant.
Avoiding crowds, making sure that the social distancing, wearing of masks, the washing of hands and sanitizing. We also have the additional tool, which is the vaccination.
South Africa remains the worst COVID-affected country in Africa, with nearly 3 million infections and close to 90,000 deaths. With scientists admitting that they still have a lot to learn about the new variant, B.1.1.529, a harder lockdown remains one of the few options on the government's table, no matter how unpopular or painful. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Fighting between herders in Sudan's western Darfur region has been flaring up, with the UN reporting for at least 43 people so far have been killed, 46 villages burned and looted, and an unknown number of people injured. Also, the majority of the 4,300 people affected by the violence have been displaced, some fleeing west across the border to Chad. West Darfur Governor Khamis Abdallah said the violence was sparked by a dispute over camel looting and that the situation has been stabilized with the deployment of military reinforcements. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports that thousands of Sudanese took to the streets yesterday in the capital Khartoum, renewing their demand for a civilian government and denouncing the country's military rulers. The demonstrations followed the military's signing of a power-sharing deal with Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok after he was released from house arrest. Sudan's pro-democracy movement says the deal falls short of their demands for full civilian rule. They accuse Hamdok of allowing himself to serve as a fig leaf for the military to hold on to power. During a telephone conversation with Tunisian President Kais Saied, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the U.S. will continue its support for the country when the dates of the reforms are fixed. The Tunisian presidency added that Blinken expressed the White House's desire that these reforms find their way to materialization as soon as possible. Radwan Masmoudi, president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy in Washington, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi the impact of such a U.S. message would bring in restoring Tunisia's democratic transition.
I think the U.S. and the Biden administration are trying to send a message to Kais Saied and to the Tunisian government as a whole that the U.S. is ready to help and to support Tunisia economically, financially, and security-wise, but that this support is conditional upon the restoration of the democratic process. Tunisia has to respect the constitution and the laws of the country. The government has to respect human rights in general, especially putting an end to the use of military courts against civilians. And most importantly, the government has to allow the reopening of the Tunisian parliament. President Kais Saied thinks that announcing the dates for such a return is sufficient, but I do not think that it will be enough because he can renege on those dates as he has done many times in the past. So I think the United States wants not only dates, but also implementation of those reforms and of the roadmap of the restoration of democracy.
So far, Tunisian parties and unions have repeatedly called on Saied to announce a time-bound roadmap to get out of the current crisis, warning that it will lead to a further deterioration of the situation at the political and economic levels. The majority of political forces in Tunisia reject Saied's exceptional measures and consider them a coup against the constitution. However, the president is not listening. What's the way out?
I think that the way out is actually very simple. It is to respect the constitution and to respect the laws of the country. And it can happen in three simple steps. Number one has to be the reopening of the parliament so that there are checks and balances against the unlimited powers that the president currently has and has confiscated from other branches of government. So the first step is to reopen the parliament. The second step is starting a far-reaching open and inclusive national dialogue with all the major political forces and national organizations on the political, economic, and social reforms that need to take place, including, of course, reforming the electoral laws and the law on political parties. And number three is calling for early presidential and legislative elections within the next 3 or 4 months. So these three steps are very simple and very easy, and President Kais Saied could implement them tomorrow if he wanted to. But unfortunately, so far, he is not listening to the advice of most Tunisians inside Tunisia or of other countries such as the United States and the European Union who are urging him to return to democracy. And of course, number four, which is also very important, is to immediately release all political prisoners and end the use of military courts against civilians and against journalists and against bloggers. And I think if he does these 3 or 4 things, I think he will find that most Tunisians will be supportive and the international community also will be very supportive.
With the continued deterioration in the Tunisian economy, do you think the appointment of a new prime minister in Tunisia will restore negotiations with the International Monetary Fund?
Well, I think the problem is that this new prime minister has no real authority in the new regime and in the vision of President Qais Saied. She is basically serving as his secretary. He tells her what to do, and she has to say, yes, sir, and go implement what he tells her to do. Therefore, she's not really a prime minister, and she's not really an independent government. And this is also unconstitutional, because under the current constitution, the government must be approved by the parliament and is accountable also to the parliament and not only to the president. But of course, the negotiations with the IMF can be started at any time, but I think they will not be easy, because the IMF wants to see real reforms implemented in the political system and in the economic system. And these reforms will not be easy, and they will not be popular without a national unity government that has the backing and has the support of all Tunisians and of all the major political parties, organizations in Tunisia, which is not currently the case. Legally and morally, the IMF cannot give a major loan or support package to any country without the approval and the support of the parliament. And until now, Tunisia has no parliament.
That was Radwan Masmoudi, president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy in Washington, speaking with my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawi. Conflict-plagued Ethiopia has announced new rules against sharing information on battlefield outcomes in the fight against Tigrayan rebels. The move, according to the French news agency AFP, could bring sanctions against journalists. The government has warned the United States against spreading false information that the rebels are nearing the capital Addis Ababa. Some Ethiopians were outraged this week when the U.S. Embassy, which already has advised its citizens to leave the country, warned of possible terrorist attacks. Thousands protested outside the U.S. and British embassies in the capital Addis Ababa yesterday and urged U.S. President Joe Biden to reverse his policy towards Ethiopia. A spokesperson for the Ethiopian government said that in addition to the Tigray rebels, the country is also fighting what it called colonialism of the powerful states of the West. Cameroonian officials say a suspected separatist attack on a school this week, which left four students and a teacher dead, has scared hundreds of teachers and students from going to school. Cameroon's military said it launched a search yesterday for the suspected rebels, who it says were disguised as government troops when they opened fire on the school. Bokidwan Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's Ministry of Secondary Education said in a statement Friday, several hundred students and teachers have not been to school in Ekondo Titi, an English-speaking western town, since the attack. 39-year-old driver Humphrey Ngum is among the parents who have withdrawn their children from schools in Ekondo Titi. Ngum says he is relocating his son to a school in Douala, a French-speaking commercial town, due to insecurity in schools in the English-speaking western regions.
In the University of Buya, there was a bomb that exploded where there were students, and also in Bamenda, a student that was coming back from school. So people should be very careful. As a matter of fact, schooling in the northwest and southwest is dangerous. That is why you see people come from these insecurity regions. The schools that are neighboring towns like Bausang and Douala.
Speaking by telephone from Douala, Ngum said in 2018, he escaped fighting between separatists and government troops in his hometown, Ekondo Titi, and fled to Douala. He said he returned to Ekondo Titi in September when the government assured civilians of their safety and reopened some schools that were closed by separatist fighters in the English-speaking western regions. The government reported this week that armed attacks on schools scared teachers and students. In Ekondo Titi, three students and a 58-year-old French language teacher were shot dead. Another student died a day after he was rushed to a hospital in Boya, a nearby English-speaking town, to be treated for gunshot wounds. All the dead students were between 12 and 17 years of age. 7 students who were wounded are receiving treatment in hospitals in Boya. The military said explosives were planted by fighters in the school. Aboluwa Timotei is the top government official in Ekondo City. He says enough security measures have been taken to protect schools, teachers, and students from any further attack. Speaking via WhatsApp, Aboluwa pleaded with parents to send their children to school and to the fleeing teachers to return.
We have deployed our security forces to see if they can get the authors of these barbaric acts. I have had a crisis meeting with my defense and security staff. I have reassured the education stakeholders on the measure provided so that teaching activities should not be interrupted.
In a release on Thursday, the military accused separatists for the attack on the school at Ekondo City. The military said more than 10 fighters, led by Ten Kobo, a self-proclaimed separatist general, masterminded the attack. Ten Kobo has on social media platforms, including WhatsApp and Facebook, denied involvement in the attack. He said the military committed the atrocity and is blaming fighters to give separatists a bad name to the international community. The military maintains that the attack was carried out by fighters. The Center for Human Rights and Democracy in Africa, CHRDA, says it is imperative for both separatist fighters and government troops to spare teachers and school children. Eyong Ta is a CHRDA official. He says CHRDA is asking the government to investigate the incident impartially and effectively.
Schools are a sacred area, and schools should not be attacked for whatever reason. If they are even pursuing somebody for having committed an offense or a crime, and the person enters the school, for the fact that shooting that person will affect pupils or students, that affects should keep that person safe. Schools are sacred areas, and they should be protected.
Cameroon says at least 11 attacks have been reported on schools in the English-speaking Western regions within the past month. At least 10 children have died in the attacks. The United Nations and international rights groups have strongly condemned what they call merciless attacks on schools in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé. Cameroon.
In Zimbabwe, the Eat Out Movement, a non-profit organization that works with the homeless, recently completed a 439-kilometer walk meant to raise awareness on housing shortages and fundraise for those living without shelter. From Harare, reporter Kuzai Zadwashi has the details.
Henry Chigama is the founder and CEO of the Eat Out Movement. He explained the goals of the campaign.
The walk was aimed at raising awareness and funds to build what we call Hubs of Hope centers, which are institutions that will train, rehabilitate, and reintegrate homeless people back into society.
He says they raised over 100,000 in local currency and just about $1,000. Despite the lower than expected receipts, Chigama says the movement made progress on other fronts.
We were walking about 35 kilometers a day, going through towns, meeting political leaders, business leaders, organizations that are already doing something within the homelessness area, and also meeting homeless people. We carried out a few soup kitchens along the way.
Chigama says the walk helped raise public consciousness on homelessness.
We have done really well in terms of awareness because in almost all the cities that we passed through, we were able to engage the community, engage our leaders, whether it's political, whether it's government, whether it's business, and even the civic organizations as well, where some were even unaware of how deep this problem of homelessness is.
What's more, Chigama says, the lawmakers they met during the walk pledged to raise the issue of homelessness in Parliament. He says the walk is the beginning of the movement's campaign to raise awareness and fundraise for the homeless. As for what's coming up next, he says his organization will be releasing a documentary on the walk in the hope to raise more funds. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm